damn late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing Jim Bronchi. He is formerly an electronics engineer for the Naval Air Warfare Center Weapons Division, and he spoke out against the Iraq War in 2003 as a member of Military Families Speak Out, and he's the chair of the Southwest Michigan Green Party, and he's got this piece in truthout.org, very important this year, how Biden's secret 2002 meetings led to war in Iraq. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Jim?
Doing great, Scott. Couldn't be happier.
Good. Happy to hear that, and very happy to have you on the show. I almost can't believe it, but the following words are about to fall out of my mouth. Joe Biden is by far the front runner for the Democratic Party nomination for President of the United States right now, and it's early, but he's doing pretty well, and it must be that somebody hit all the Democrats on the head and they all got a case of the amnesia. So I brought you on to maybe remind them of some pertinent facts about who this guy is and how many people he's killed.
Well, I appreciate you for that, Scott. After all, Biden is just my worst candidate for president. I mean, when you look at what he did to create the Iraq War, it was built on nonsense. And that's what I wrote about in my article, reviewing the Senate Foreign Relations Committee meeting that he chaired, where he just stacked the deck on the participants. You didn't see him inviting Scott Ritter, who said Iraq wasn't a threat, and to deal with them diplomatically.
Well, now slow down a little bit, because a lot of our audience is young enough that they don't know this stuff. They didn't live through it the way that we did at all. So he was the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And Scott Ritter was who again?
Well, Scott Ritter was a weapons inspector that went into Iraq as a part of UNSCOM, United Nations Special Committee. And they were seeking out WMD in Iraq and disabling it. And he spent a number of years doing that. And he was basically given a lot of airtime saying that there was no threat by Iraq when they'd done a lot of disabling of WMD there. And so Biden didn't have him on his meeting. And he ended up just stacking the deck and having a fellow by the name of Kadir Hamza, who wrote a book called Saddam's Bomb Maker, and he was later just discredited as not being much of anything. He left Iraq in 1994. So do you have any other questions? Do you want me to go on a little bit? I mean, there was never any real evidence. And I point out with my own experience, I expected to see some details like, God, you know, some radar images, satellite photos.
Well, as you say in the article, this was all secret at first, but then I guess the transcript of the hearing was released. Was it before the war that the transcript came out?
Oh, yeah, it was about a month after he had this meeting.
Okay.
And, of course, secret isn't really right. I mean, the meeting wasn't held in secret. It was just not open to the public.
Okay.
And the only way you found out about what happened is by getting the transcript. And this is the real conundrum with our news media is they didn't do that. When I was the only one, I mean, I believe I'm the only one that ever read the transcript, honestly. And here we're going to war, and our news media doesn't even follow up on this stuff, really dig in for the details.
Yeah, which, by the way, I've never read it, although I do have your link here. I'm opening the link in a new tab right now because I want to go back. You know, at the time, well, Justin Raimondo at antiwar.com wrote an article called "The Fix Is In," and it was just about what you're talking about. It was in real time that here Joe Biden is excluding anyone who knows better and is bringing on only hawks just to confirm his bias and what he wants the rest of the Senate Democrats to believe and this kind of thing. And, you know, in fact, I saw a thing this morning or a couple days ago, I guess, by Stephen Zunis, where he points out that Biden was calling for boots on the ground, quote unquote, in Iraq since 1998, when he helped push through the Iraq Liberation Act, which Bill Clinton signed then, and which Ron Paul warned then was a virtual declaration of war that will lead to war within a very short number of years, which turned out to be absolutely correct. So he was really just as bad as Bush or Wolfowitz on this. He was one of the prime movers, the maker-surers that this thing happened. It wasn't just that he let it happen or that he could have stopped it, which he could have. But he was might as well have been on the Bush cabinet.
Exactly. And at some point, you have to look at how and why people like Biden come about. It's because of the Washington environment, the, you know, number of lobbying organizations that represent foreign countries. You can go to a website like Foreign Lobby Watch and just read about the amount of money they track as being given for the sake of those foreign countries. And it's quite shocking, really, but I mean, you see links go around of say, Biden giving presentations to, you know, some questionable organizations, really, in terms of their patriotism. They're there for a foreign country. And we really have to outlaw those type of lobbying organizations. They're not patriotic organizations. And that's where Biden gets his strength from. And so he ends up with a foreign policy that is not for the American people and our Constitution.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly right. And that certainly was a big part of what happened in Iraq War II was the foreign lobbies. And I mean, that was no secret. the motivations of the neoconservatives and the amount of help that they got from AIPAC and other pro-Israel organizations during that whole time, as Walter Mearsheimer put it, in their book, The Lobby, it's not that the lobby really did the Iraq War, but it couldn't have happened without them. So,
right.
That's a pretty big deal.
When we give billions to Israel, who can say if some of that money isn't coming back in the form of aid to our politicians that support Israel?
Right.
It's unnerving, really, and Biden's right there, like leading the way.
Yep. And by the way, for anyone who believes this kind of slogan that we've all been inundated with, that it may have been a mistake, but they really meant well, and everybody believed at the time that Saddam was going to attack us with these weapons and give them to Osama and all this, I would just point out that, and I'm no partisan of any party, and especially not the Democrats, but the majority of the Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against the resolution. And so John Kerry and Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton and the different Democrat hawks in the Senate who went along with it, they have no excuse. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, or I guess Minority Leader of the House then, knew better. And so what was their excuse other than they thought it would be good for them to help Bush kill these innocent people? It turns out more than a million of them.
Right. Yep. It that's why I've started a Green Party chapter here. You know, it's the only one that doesn't take money from these special interests.
Hey guys, Scott here. I've got some books you should read. The War State by Mike Swanson, a great history of the early Cold War. No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. how to run your computer business like a good libertarian. Oh yeah, and don't forget Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, by me. Hey y'all, here's the thing. Donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, and you can get a QR code commodity disc as my gift to you. It's a 1 ounce silver disc with a QR code on the back. You take a picture of it with your phone, and it gives you the instant spot price and lets you know what that silver, that ounce of silver, is worth on the market in Federal Reserve notes in real time. It's the future of currency in the past, too. CommodityDiscs.com or just go to ScottHorton.org/donate. Hey, guys, you know, you probably need a new website. A lot of people do. What you need to do then is go to ExpandDesigns.com. The great Harley Abbott and his team over at ExpandDesigns.com, they'll hook you up with a great new website for 2019. And in fact, what you really should do is type in expanddesigns.com/Scott and you'll save $500. Let me ask you about this, because I don't know, you could probably write volumes about the whole sociology of the anti-war movement in the 21st century and what all is going on with this thing where, there was obviously a great partisan interest on the entire left half of American politics from Pelosi and on down to oppose this war, especially once it got going, and to hang it around Bush's neck for electoral reasons. It did help the Democrats in 2006 and in 2008, obviously, exploiting the war. And it's pretty obvious why a lot of liberals and progressives felt like keeping their mouth shut in order to not hurt Obama when he continued all of the wars and even added a few to the list. But now, it seems so strange that Donald Trump, even though he does nothing but escalate wars, he hadn't launched any new ones, but he's come pretty close, but he's escalated every single one of the wars that he inherited from Obama, but he somehow is known as being sometimes saying anti-war statements or something. And then so apparently that means that he's stolen that issue entirely from liberals and progressives who now would rather not say anything anti-war because that would what? Make Obama look bad and Trump look good? So they can't even say an anti-interventionist thing at all now or something? There's just this total silence, even though the foreign policy under a Republican president is absolutely horrible. But instead, let's argue about pronouns, or let's argue about Russia or some nonsense, instead of looking at the wars in the Middle East and all the damage that they've wrought. And I don't mean to indict the entire left. Especially real leftists, obviously, who hate Democrats, are hardcore on this stuff and are good on this stuff. And a lot of progressives, too, especially writers and things. But you know what I mean in terms of the broad sort of liberal population of America. It just seems like all this stuff, even though the Iraq war continues to this day, we got American troops fighting in Western Iraq right now. And the whole thing is just seems to no longer be an issue. Did you hear there's a fire on a farm in Brazil?
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, the Amazon rainforest is the last concern that Trump has, as well as the, any part of our climate change or ecology.
Is just that it's the story of the day. It's the news cycle story of the day. And so the genocide in Yemen, it has to take a back seat.
Oh, yeah. Well, Trump hasn't started a war, but he just doesn't have the competence to inspire most of Americans. But they'll go along. And yeah. I'm afraid I just don't have any trust in our mainstream news media anymore. I think they're like the tail wagging the dog. And they continually wag the dog with their own propaganda. And Americans, I think, are quite frustrated with our mainstream news media, really.
Well, that's a big part of how Trump got elected, was by demonizing them. And people agreed with what he said about them, that, geez, they lie to you all the time. And they try to force you to believe what they want you to believe. And everybody said, yeah, we hate that. And so,
right. The concept of fake news, I can credit with Trump with that, really. Because a lot of it is fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because that term originally applied to sites that were really just like not really like The Onion, but there were sites like, for example, the EU Times or the National Report. And basically the articles themselves weren't funny. The joke was just if they could get you to believe it, essentially. And they were all hoax stories. And that was what the term originally used. But then people recognize it like, you know what? The Washington Post isn't any more honest than that. The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times aren't any more honest than that. And Lord knows NBC News isn't any more honest than that. So what the hey? Might as well apply it where it fits, you know?
Right, and the problems then perpetuate themselves.
Yeah. And by the way, this goes back to your article in Iraq War II, and not just all the media's failure then, but the complete and total lack of accountability for those failures. And I mean the verb, you know, the failures that they committed, but also the failures, the people who went along for the money and for the social psychology of the whole situation, who should have all been completely purged. Every one of those every newspaper editor in America should have been fired and replaced by somebody who knew better in 2002. But that just didn't happen. 2003. That just didn't happen.
Right. And it's a shame. I mean, capitalism rules and the owners of the franchises stay in business.
Yep, and their agendas stay the same.
Yeah, thing people can do is what you're doing, which is act as an independent news source. And that's what I do, in a way, just by telling my friends.
Sure.
And we can do it better now with, like, Facebook and stuff. A lot of the different networks out there, YouTube, do help you get the word out.
Yeah. Well, and that's why they're panicking and trying to clamp down on it so hard on the right and the left. And for anyone, because essentially it's about power versus those who don't have any and want some, is the real division at play. And so they're clamping down on you know, all kinds of people and deplatforming them, as they call it, deranking them on Google and all these things. There's a whole other fight. But I want to go back to this thing that you wrote here about when you read the transcript about, because of your experience in the Navy, maybe you talk a little bit about that and what it was that you were expecting. You had a pretty good educated guess as to what you would find in the transcripts of these hearings, where the experts came and explained to Joe Biden, yeah, here's what they have and here's how we know it. And instead, you read it and felt really deflated because of what turned out that none of that stuff was in there. But if you could...
Yeah, there was no real facts. It was all like conjecture.
So go back to your position in the Navy and then what you expected to see in there at a minimum.
Well, sure. Like real discussions of weapons technology, you know, navigation systems, radar, even biological warfare. In warheads. And Iraq doesn't have our technology. They don't have, you can't put together ICBMs like with a ragtag team of engineers. And so as someone proud of America and our accomplishments, I know a third world nation just couldn't stand up to us and the technology. So it was all inference on things that Saddam said and what their government did, like, oh, they said this, but they really mean that, like they're hiding WMD somewhere. Well, that's not proof to push us to war. Shouldn't be. We should be a nation of integrity, not, you know, nonsense.
Yeah.
And that was nonsense.
Well, tell me this. Were there evidences in there of kind of other motives that they, you know, weren't really talking about? Because like you say, it was kind of a private meeting. I wonder if they were a little loose-lipped about what they were really doing, since they really weren't talking about weapons of mass destruction, not in any detailed way.
Well, right. And I think the most damning thing in the entire transcript is on page 15, since you've opened it up, a statement by Dr. Kadir Hamza. And it's only damning in a illogical way. It's just conjecture. And so he really says something like, well, they said that if they let us in, we're compromising their security. But what they really mean is they want to hide their WMD from us. That's conjecture. And of course, it turned out to be that they weren't hiding any at WMD, you know, because they didn't have any more.
Right. And of course, they'd already let the UN inspect everything other than the palaces themselves, which, you know, people might not even believe us if they don't remember this from back then. But that this was a crucial argument of the War Party at the time was that we know that he has chemical weapons factories underneath his palaces, because that's where Saddam sleeps at night, is in the penthouse suite above a chemical weapons factory. And so that must be the only reason that they won't let us inspect the bunkers and tunnels underneath his palaces. And grown adult human beings, including, you know, professionals in the media, as you're emphasizing here, swallowed that and regurgitated it for their audiences, too. Oh, yeah. That's obviously why Saddam Hussein won't let American and UN forces underneath his palaces, is because he's making mustard gas down there, even without Ronald Reagan to help him.
Right. And who would want mustard gas underneath their home?
Seriously. Especially what dictator who can have whatever he wants? You know, there might be poor people in America who don't have a choice but to live next to a military base full of chemical weapons. But Saddam Hussein, I'm pretty sure he could at least station himself down the block or something, you know. But they made it sound like, well, he put it there just to protect it. Right? And of course, you're just not supposed to ask the question, would he really take that risk living on top of a batch of sarin? You know, come on.
Right.
But, yep, that's how they got us into war. That's what they told your mom and dad, kids. Saddam has a secret sarin factory underneath his bedroom. And so we have to start a war in order to protect you from it. And your mom and dad bought it, too. How do you like that? Sorry.
Yeah, I actually have a nephew that actually served in the military, in Saddam's compound, they're doing IT work, you know, during the war. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they didn't have anything down there.
Of course not.
Under his compound. I mean, so we have to address just how illogical our government can be sometimes and how they just don't listen to the people. I was just part of the millions that protested the war, and yeah, they didn't listen.
Right.
So it becomes, where do we go from here? Can we really fight against, you know, foreign lobbying groups, against illogical aid to foreign countries that are questionable, you know, for us to be, can we really call a lot of these foreign countries like our allies? Some of them aren't. You know, that we send aid to, and it turns around and comes back and pays off our politicians.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really appreciate you writing this thing, and because Biden deserves the heat. But besides that, you know, it should, in my mind, it's always 2002 and 2003. And that's how it should be for the American people, that we should not be able to just get over this, get past this, forget about this. And there's so many important lessons to come from this entirely, you know, massively destructive, unforced error. This, even from the point of view of the American empire, they shouldn't have done this. The way all they did was empower Iran and empower Al-Qaeda and not win a bunch of permanent bases, not improve America's, you know, position and power and influence in the Middle East at all. Even from the empire's point of view, it's been counterproductive. From the average American's point of view, from the average Iraqi's point of view, this is just like when the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor, Day of Infamy, started a war against us. How dare they? Those sneaky bastards. That's what we did. Started a war. And one that got more than 1 million people killed. And as you're saying here, over a bunch of nonsense that anyone could have seen through if they wanted to at the time.
It was against our Constitution, and it set America on a downhill slide, which we weren't focused on ourselves. We were really focused on Iraq. And look what happened in 2008. You know, we had our own economic catastrophe, which you could really say was partially due to the war.
Of course. Absolutely. I mean, they had to make the war seem free. Can you imagine if they had just raised everyone's taxes? Listen, we let Osama go, but now we want to have another war against Saddam Hussein, who didn't do it. But it's going to be really expensive. It's going to cost $5 or $6 trillion. So what we're going to do is we're going to bump everyone up a tax bracket. And what would have happened then? George Bush would have been run out of town on a rail. Instead, they just had Alan Greenspan print the money and make it seem free. And in fact, I think it's really lucky for history that the crash did happen while Bush was still in power. He still had 2-3 months to go as a lame duck there. September 08, it crashed on his watch. So they couldn't just blame it all on the next guy, whose policies were exactly the same, by the way. He just started up, you know, exactly what Bush did too. Oh, we have a crash. Let's print money and launch new wars. And unfortunately, he got out of power before the next crash, so it'll be blamed on his successor, although he deserves his share of the blame for it. But still, that's the whole thing, man, about this, why we have to keep going back over this, because it didn't have to be this way at all. These are decisions that certain humans made that they did not have to make. It could have been totally different. The counterfactual is so obvious. Joe Biden could have said to Hillary and to Kerry, hey, we got to stop this. We can do it. Hillary, you're the wife of the former president. Get out there and tell him that you know that this stuff isn't true. And me and him, we'll all back you up. Let's save the day. They could have done that. And they could have stopped the war. They could have told the American people Dick Cheney's far more dangerous to our country than Saddam Hussein. And, you know, they could have done it. But they decided instead that it would, for their own selfish interest, that they would look better as hawks. Because, you know, a lot of those guys, Bill Clinton, even though he was just the governor at the time, but also Kerry and Biden had opposed Iraq War I and then had never led, lived it down. They had never been able to live that down, that they had voted against the first Iraq War, which was such a great war that they had to continue it 10 years later. But so they figure they better support this one, when they could have been heroes, and it wouldn't have taken much effort either. As you said, there were millions of people in the street demanding that they do something to stop it, but they refused.
It's very frustrating for the average American. The average American doesn't even watch the news, our mainstream news. And I have no faith in our mainstream news myself. If there's reporting on a hurricane, I might watch. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have too much interest to lie to us about when and where it's going to make landfall most of the time, probably. But yeah, and this is the other thing, too, is where Iraq could actually serve as a false example of, like, well, that one time, when in fact they've done nothing but lie us into war ever since. They lied us into staying in Iraq ever after the invasion of 03. They lied us into Libya. They lied us into Syria. They lied us into Iraq War III. Where, you know, against the Islamic State, they've lied us into, I guess they didn't even mention their wars in Mali and Somalia and some of these other places. But the entire thing has been based off of dishonesty. They lied to us about the whole Russiagate scam for 3 years. They lied to us about everything all the time. And so, yeah, at least if we can get people to err on the side of peace, as long as you're not believing them, then I think that's progress.
Well, I have a special amount of frustration also. I had to start following at the age of 50 the real events in the Middle East and research the United Nations, the creation of Israel, and even current reporting on serious events in Israel and the Middle East. And I realized that our news media was just not honest with that either. And that became a real sticky issue with me, because Americans aren't getting the truth with the real nature of things in Israel. And I mean, I've got a Jewish friend, a girlfriend who left Israel, was born in Israel and came to America and never went back. And so I have Jewish friends, but still that doesn't mean I realize that Israel is a good place for Jews. It wasn't created like America was. It was created out of desperation by Jews to have a place for Jews when most of the people that lived there weren't Jewish. And so it became a nation of unequal rights. And that is ultimately bad for the favored group of people. So, and our news media just doesn't get to the real truth there. And we're in a continued state of disorder because of it.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point that you make, that it's against the interests of the Israelis to let their government keep doing what they've been doing. Just like Ron Paul had said back in his big fight with Giuliani about, if you think that America can just go around the world doing whatever we want and never have to suffer the consequences, then you believe that at, you know, we believe that at our own peril. We're liable to get ourselves into real messes if we're blind to the real consequences of what happens, or if we blame extraneous circumstances for the causes of our problems instead of living up to the reality of that. And I think that absolutely is true in the case of Israel as well, where any friend of Israel would tell them that you got to get rid of Likud, man. And for that matter, you know, labor too. These guys, what they're doing is they've set Israel on a path where, you know, essentially it can't be Israel anymore. They're not going to be able to keep half their population in bondage forever. And so they're either going to let them go, or they're going to give up the exclusive Jewish nature of their state. And they want neither, but they're going to have to choose. And the fact that they're in this position is only because they've let their government put them in this position. They could have let the West Bank go 50 years ago. You know?
Right. And we should be sending $3 billion a year to the non-Jews there called the Palestinians instead of Israel. And that would probably stop a lot of the conflict.
Yeah, or just call the whole intervention off. I mean, without American cover, I think Israel would have to make peace very quickly. But, oh, man.
They would have to learn the concept of equal rights and fairness and not shoot people just because they're protesting and not Jews, you know, protesting Jerusalem. You know, that was just the latest round of ugliness 6 months ago when they killed like 50 Palestinian protesters protesting Jerusalem as the new Jewish capital. Yeah. The story goes on, and our news media doesn't jump to the cause of really criticizing Israel.
Yeah, and no, so, they never will either. It is up to you and me. But I'll tell you what, I'm so sorry that I have to let you go here. I am really late for my next one. But I hope you'll keep writing more. I see you have an archive here at truthout.org, and I hope you'll keep writing. And I hope if you do have an email list of some kind that you'll put me on it, because I like this stuff.
Okay, Scott.
All right. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, everybody. That is Jim Bronke, and he wrote this great thing at truthout.org. Show all your liberal friends. It's called How Biden's Secret 2002 Meetings Led to War in Iraq. All right, y'all, thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org, at scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/scotthortonshow. Oh, yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan, at foolserrand.us.